With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You've heard us talk about DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, and how payday can come every day by entering their contests with huge cash prizes up for grabs. This week is jam-packed with action ranging from basketball to golf, and DraftKings has plenty of ways for you to have a front row seat to all the action. Making a lineup for DraftKings adds excitement to every night and is simple to do. Just draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every moment means more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Each player has a salary associated with drafting them. Assemble a lineup of players while staying under the salary cap, and then sit back and watch your points pile up. DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to users across all sports. DraftKings is the leader in daily fantasy sports, so there's no better place to get in on all the action. Now that you know how to play, download the DraftKings app and sign up using promo code THPN. New users will get a free entry with their first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for more details.
This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
This is the Broadway Boys podcast through the Hockey Podcast Network, and we are back with Season 2, Episode 23, as Andy and I have one of the more unique podcasts, as the New York Rangers are actually playing live against the Philadelphia Flyers. So if you're watching the game at this moment, Chris Kreider just banged home goal number 2, and the Rangers make it a 3-2 game. But first, I have to ask Andy, how are you doing?
What a hectic week it's been. Both my personal life, just with work commitments, it's been kind of hectic, and especially with everything that's happening with the Rangers, it's just when it rains, it pours. And you know what? Now that I say that, that's probably what the name of this episode's going to be. We've been coining them on the fly recently, so I'm going to say when it rains, it pours. Everything that's going on with Panarin, last minute additions, players getting added to the COVID list last minute with protocol. You know, still missing players to injury. That's a lot. And I mean, it's just this season is unlike any other, obviously, with the what teams are up against and how that lines up with expectations, and especially where you feel like it, because if you just have a poor stretch, you can pretty much be out of it. And we saw a coaching change up north, just because teams just don't have the luxury of time they usually do to try to get out of skids. And if you can control something, if you can make a change somewhere, they're probably going to do it. But yeah, lots to talk about. But obviously the most pressing being what's happening with Panarin in that situation.
Yeah, so I guess we should definitely talk about Artemi Panarin and the news that kind of took all of New York City by shock. You know, with there not being any, you know, New York Mets or New York Yankee baseball starting, both football teams, the Jets and Giants, not happening. WFAN, as I'm stuck in a van all day long, WFAN had a lot of coverage on it. And, you know, Boomer Esiason, obviously, is a huge New York Rangers fan, and they did some great coverage on the Panarin situation. And, you know, it's unfortunate because there's so many different aspects to this. And at the end of the day, I think I speak for the both of us that, number one, we hope that accusations are completely false. Number two, we hope that his family is safe if those accusations are false, because it obviously would have been a hit piece at that point. And given the structure of the, you know, of Russia and the politics within the reasoning behind this attack on Panarin, we just hope that his family is okay. What were your initial thoughts? And you know, obviously tell us how you've collected yourself to this moment now after, you know, some details have emerged.
Yeah. Look, obviously, whenever you're dealing with any accusations of any sort that are serious, especially that one that would at least was intimated to be about something like, you know, physically assaulting anyone, you know, much less a young woman, you obviously have to be very careful. So obviously, the second I heard it, I was like, I'm going to collect all the facts here and be patient and not be quick to jump to social media to either, you know, publicly lambast Panarin or outright just say, like, this is bullshit and this is whatever. You know, now that a few days the dust has settled between, you know, we've various writers have, you know, and former teammates of Panarin have either done some digging and some, you know, they're either use their journalistic integrity to try to find things out, or just former teammates have really come out in support and said nothing like that ever happened. Or, you know, even I think someone went as far as to contact the police precinct there, and that was never intimated. The KHL said, you know, nothing was ever on our books. You know, we never heard about it because obviously if we had heard something like that happen, we would have investigated. And just the more that comes out, the more that it looks like this is clearly a smear campaign against Panarin. Now, most likely, I think it's been speculated that the former coach, who has come out and said this against Panarin, in his statement, he alleged that, you know, it was the beginning that led Panarin down an evil path to oppose Putin, because Panarin, as we know, has been outspoken against you know, Vladimir Putin, obviously, and has shown support for Navalny, his political rival. And it's clear that this gentleman, A, is clearly has a history of mental instability. You know, B, that I don't necessarily know this was orchestrated by Putin and his party himself, but the speculation is that this was done as a way to kind of, A, ingratiate himself to that political party because he is a Putin supporter, and that because he also makes claims that Panarin was stealing from teammates or something. And it's just the more that gets looked into this, the more that it seems like it is utterly false and it's, you know, absolute smear campaign and yeah, a bunch of horse manure. So, but that being said, the Rangers come out and they with a very strongly worded statement supporting Panarin and literally saying, like, you know, we believe this is a political, you know, this is more of a political component than an actual story here. And yeah, and Panarin asks for a leave of absence for the team. I think Boomer is the first, like you said, was the first to say he believes it's 2 weeks to, you know, because we know Panarin still has his grandparents who raised him and some family are still in Russia. And if this is as serious as most people think it is and on the worst end, yeah, they could be in danger of some sort. So you don't know if I assume this time is to examine legal options, make sure this isn't something that, you know, gains any more traction than it needs to, although it's obviously been all over the place recently. But I think for the most part, we can now almost unequivocally say that between it, there actually not being someone to make the claim that this happened to them, an individual, all the former teammates saying that nothing like that ever happened. I think someone said that, like, that the most legs the story could have is that they were in a nightclub or something and someone got, like, pushed or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I mean, and again, there's no one, this wasn't a claim made by someone who feel like they were saying, oh, this is a claim made by a former coach with a history of mental instability. And this is the same person that I think if you listen to TJ Gagliardi on, he was talked about playing in the KHL on Spit and Chicklets, and like the guy wanted to get him arrested, you know, because he was just nuts. So but obviously, like I said, to wrap it up, like, this is clearly a delicate situation. Obviously, we wish Panarin and his family the best. I think enough has come to light now, especially the more digging that's done, all it does seem to further exonerate Panarin. But yeah, it's still a scary situation, and you hopefully he can eventually make sure everyone's taken care of and put it behind him. But yeah, right now it's scary, and the Rangers are without him, obviously.
Right. And, you know, listening to Boomer and Gio, they had a a sports media, but he covers Russian athletes in the United States out of Baltimore, and he was on, and he was actually very good, and you know, I don't want to make any jokes about, you know, the whole Putin thing, because, you know, I did see jokes, obviously, online, people poking fun, and I kind of did at first, too. But after listening to the interview and hearing his, you know, two cents on the situation is, you know, Panarin might not be in danger directly, but his family certainly is. And this stuff is real. It's real, you know, it's real situations that, you know, unfortunately, Russian hockey players have to face. They have faced things like this in the past with Malkin having to be pretty much snuck out of Russia to be able to come to Pittsburgh and play after being drafted. The situation with Pavel Bure being extorted and him being essentially his family being held hostage against their will unless he sent them money. I know Fedorov had issues. So this is something that isn't new, but it is something that, you know, it needs to be taken serious. And, you know, we're not going to make any Putin jokes or anything like that, you know, especially, you know, after, you know, everything that Panarin has done. And he just seems like a very unselfish person. You saw how he stepped up in the COVID situation. And, you know, it just... Here's a guy that's expressing his political beliefs, and it's a shame that you know, things have gone this far. I will say one more thing. I wish I knew the guy's name. It was such a tough name to even say, unfortunately. But his take on the whole thing was that this was not actually done by Putin himself, but this has happened before with other athletes. And what it is people who want to be almost like a kiss ass to Putin.
Yeah, they want to ingratiate themselves to.
Exactly. Like, yeah. You know, exactly. So he was almost certain that this has nothing to do with actual politics, but more people trying to kiss ass in the political world. So hopefully, you know, Panarin can get his family into a safe place and he can join the Rangers back and continue to help us try to win hockey games. So, obviously Panarin, you know, we're thinking about you. And I guess we should get into a little bit of the news of the North. I know, I feel like this is going to be your bread and butter because this yeah. puts the Rangers in a weird situation, I think. So I want to hear your take on it before I give mine.
Sure. All right. Well, obviously, we know now that this morning, as James and I record this on a Wednesday, Claude Julien, and I forget which one of his assistants was. Let relieve of duties from head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. You know, they've been in a bit of a, after a really strong, it seemed like they were started off pretty strong, but they've been struggling as of late. I believe that they're, you know, they're a pretty good 5-on-5 team, but I believe both their power play and their penalty kill are absolutely abysmal. And listen, I think as you've seen, most of the rancor out of that is that most of this, you know, if you show me a good coach, I'll show you a better goalie. That Carey Price has been really rough this year. And I'm not going to go into, there's enough is made about why, you know, why did Carey Price is like constantly looked at so highly, despite his numbers being very suspect and up and down every year. You know, and that's not me just bragging about Henrik Lundqvist being like the model of consistency for so long, even into his like, you know, mid 30s. But listen, I think in a nutshell, it looks like the reason he got let go is because Carey Price is having a real rough stretch and hasn't performed well. But also, listen, they needed a change. Their penalty kills is terrible. They can't keep the puck out of their net when they're on the kill, and they can't score goals on the power play. And then, yeah, they've struggled putting the puck in the net despite having that, you know, hot start with Toffoli, who was, you know, like a man on fire. But so obviously now after this happens, it was Darren Drager, Eklund. So obviously any Eklund rumor you have to take with a grain of salt. But Eklund says that the Rangers would absolutely be interested in Claude Julien, and that if his health, you know, he mentions his health because you remember he had some health issues. He's had some health issues the last couple seasons, especially now with COVID. But, you know, if he would be for it, that it was something they would be interested in doing. I don't know how much stock I put into that. I don't even necessarily know if Gorton was around when they hired him in Boston. I think maybe he was. I'm not sure. I forget when Gorton officially jumped over to the Rangers. But you know, so maybe there is that connection there, but I just don't, you know, I don't see it. If they're not ready to pull the trigger on Gerard Gallant, I don't know why they would be ready to pull the trigger on a Claude Julien, especially because, you know, their whole thing right now is development. And the knock on Claude Julien, which is pretty much the same knock on a Alain Vigneault, is that he's a guy that really leans on his vets, you know. So if you thought, you know, Rangers fans would be mad with the way, you know, Quinn is doling out ice time to his younger guys, under Claude Julien, you'd be furious, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, who knows? I think he is a better coach than at the NHL level than David Quinn, absolutely. And who knows, maybe having Jacques Martin there as a, I don't know, just as, just like to run there, at least to take care of their penalty kill, because Rangers have been one of the best penalty killing teams in the league recently, you know? So, oh boy. And as I say this, the Flyers are now up 4-2 on the Rangers. So, but anyway, that's neither. We all expected this with the, which we're going to talk about in our next segment. But yeah, listen, I don't know if the Rangers necessarily, Claude Julien is a guy who would be tops of their list, but I'm sure, you know, if there is a, there might be a connection there and they might be interested in him. I know for a fact his systems play is much better. He's a much better NHL coach than David Quinn is, at least. But at the same time, is he, you know, we always talk about Mr. Right and Mr. Right Now. I don't know if he's Mr. Right, but I definitely know he's not Mr. Right Now. But I do want to hear your take on this, James.
Well, you know, with the Montreal changing coaches, obviously looking at their, you know, the month of February falling to Ottawa, I think they lost three games against Ottawa. You know, a team that you should pretty much be beating up on, or a team that you have to beat up on if you want to make the playoffs. They make a coaching change, and you know, I kind of like it. I almost envy the move, because Montreal's not going to be patient this season. You know, they realize that although they may you know, not be at the bottom of the standings, that they need a change, and they need a change right now. And with a shortened season, they want to take advantage of the situation that they're in. And, you know, I don't blame them for making the coaching change. You know, Montreal is 9-5-4 on the season. They have, you know, a few bad losses, and, you know, they pulled the trigger right away. And, you know, I'm almost envious of that, because it's kind of what I wanted the Rangers to do. Because I don't think that the Rangers and a team like Montreal are really that far off in terms of, you know, where they could be in the standings. I'm not saying that the Rangers could win a Stanley Cup, but I'm certainly saying the Rangers deserve to be fighting for a playoff chance. And if a coaching change is the X factor, you know, bravo for the Canadiens for making that change. I'm still waiting for the New York Rangers to do the same thing. I think it's pretty apparent that the longer the Rangers wait and, you know, don't strike on, you know, a coach like Gallant being out there, I think that the Rangers are going to stick with Quinn the entire year. Now, with this coaching change making, you know, Julien available, you know, does that, I'm going to ask you this question because I truly don't know.
Yeah.
Does this coaching change with the Montreals cause almost a domino effect where you see teams on the cusp just changing it up, maybe hoping to strike gold and make the playoffs?
You know, I'm not really sure. I think a lot of that has to do with internal expectations. Montreal, you know, Marc Bergevin has said that, you know, this team, they feel they're poised to compete now, even though you look at that team and you're like, really? Like, you know, I mean, they're not a bad team on paper, but they lack really high profile talent. You know, I mean, you can argue who are the superstars on those team, you know, Carey Price, and I say that in air quotes only, Shea Weber, and he's still at his age. He has things he does well, but he still clearly has his deficiencies in terms of his foot speed at this age. And then, yeah, they have a bunch of promising young guys, but, you know, Kotkaniemi, Suzuki, these guys aren't there. They kind of just win more by being a very pesky team at even strength between, you know, Gallagher and Deneau and, you know, these types of guys. But again, they don't really have a Panarin or a, they don't have the, at least the high profile lethal talent the Rangers, at least on paper, have. But at the same time, you know, they're coached pretty well. It's just their, you know, goaltending is really a bad stretch of goaltending has really put them, you know, behind the eight ball here. And yeah, but the teams themselves aren't really that too much different. But I think the internal expectation that they should be competing in their division, whereas the Rangers, I think, you know, John Davidson has repeatedly said patience, and, you know, Vince has intimated that the organization is, you know, I mean, that he doesn't really sense there's much, you know, Quinn's seat is very hot. And yeah, I would believe that too. I don't think, you know, even if they might even already have mentally prepared themselves to move on from Quinn at some point in the near future. I just don't know if it's like bearing, you know, that skid that they were in at first was if it had continued to this point, it might be a conversation, especially because of how that can go on rookies. But, you know, Lafreniere scoring a goal and then winning two straight on the road is just enough for them to, like, you know, kind of back off the ledge a bit, you know. And now, like, if they lose, if everything holds and they lose tonight, obviously with they've been hit blues, not having Panarin and missing Hedl and having Miller and Kako on the COVID list, and, you know, you're the playing Jack Johnson, who, you know, his groin state might still be bothering him, and Johnny Brodzinski, who's probably most likely an ECHLer, you know, it's like, yeah, I just think they can explain these things away. So I don't know if Quinn's seat is necessarily that hot, but at the same time, I do say that there's maybe in their heads they think that they might, you know, angle for a Jim Montgomery or a Gerard Gallant, or hell, now maybe even a Claude Julien, you know, down the road when the time is right. But at the same time, they're not going to go, maybe they feel they're not going to go for a guy now, especially if they feel like his coaching style is not suited to, you know, if they're not ready for him, you know, much less if the coach is ready for them, type of thing, you know.
Absolutely. And you know, there are coaches out there that are really on the hot seat. And I'm curious to see if, just, you know, in general around the league, teams kind of, you know, ditch their coach. You know, I'm looking at the standings right now. Obviously, Dallas is struggling. Nashville, oh my God. What's his name out of Nashville? He's got to be next.
I don't know why Hines has a job. Hines. I mean, I know why he has a job, because he's like good buddies with Poyle, but he's clearly not an NHL coach. I've never seen any evidence of the contrary. You know, the Devils were an abject failure. You know, I think right now a team like the Calgary Flames isn't exactly very happy with Jeff Ward and his coaching. I don't know if Travis Green is in trouble for the Canucks because of the expectations going to that season. But since it was only, so far it's only been kind of one pseudo disappointing season after they overachieved a bit last year, he might be fine. But yeah, I think they're, you know, and then obviously that doesn't count teams like Detroit, where Blashill, I don't think Blashill will be there much longer, but it's very clear that after not getting Lafreniere, I'm sure that the, even though Detroit is trying to be slightly better, that they still have their, you know, their eyes set on, you know, upper tier talent in the draft. So yeah, so that's the other thing. It's about where you're at in your development, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Detroit is there in the process where you would have to get a really hungry coach to want to take over that situation. I think, you know, if you're an experienced coach, a coach that's been around the league a bunch, you might want to wait until Detroit's a little bit further in the process to jump right in, because, you know, the next couple of seasons are going to be rough, and you know, it's not an easy thing to rebuild from basically scratch and not getting lucky in the lotto, unlike the Rangers, who have been very lucky. You know, I even saw, I think Talking Hockey had like Paul Maurice, like one of the highest odds, like one of the best odds to be fired this season. And you look at them, the Winnipeg Jets, after everything that they've lost, I mean, they essentially lost like all their defensemen, you know, Trouba being one of them. Neil Pionk is just leading that team right now to an 11-6 record. And, you know, and he's on the hot seat, or at least rumored to be on the hot seat. I mean, who knows, you know, what management is expecting, but they're currently third, a team that is exactly where I'd expect them to be in the standings, if not maybe a little bit higher. So, you know, I it's crazy, Andy, because looking, you know, at everything that's happened the past couple of days, if you look at the New York Rangers roster going against the Flyers tonight, it's kind of a throwaway game. You have no K'Andre Miller now. He's on the COVID list. You have Trouba is out. You have Panarin, who's going to miss some time, probably about 2 weeks. You have an ice cold Mika Zibanejad. Kreider finally, you know, is realizing, hey, I can actually put pucks in the back of the net. But
yeah, he'll be on for 4 games and then just go turn off again. So,
you know. Right. When everybody else comes back, he'll switch it off when, exactly, you know, we need him the most. But, you know, you look at our roster, it's pretty depleted right now. I just don't see them making coaching change right now. I mean, I don't think that's going to be the thing that helps us the most right now. You know, we need to get healthy and stay healthy and you know, kind of right the ship if we spiral out of control this next couple of weeks without Panarin.
Yeah, and I think the farther we get in the season, I think the front office is, you know, maybe they're bolstering their scouting a little bit more than they have been, just knowing how it's going to go. Because, you know, if everything keeps going, if their Rangers keep going the right they're at, they might have a chance at, unless they change the rules of the draft, they might have a chance to draft, you know, in that top three again. But even if they don't, it's looking like they might at least be in the bottom. They could potentially draft in the top five, you know, worst case scenario, or six. So, but yeah, it's weird. I, you know, a few teams are finally in little slumps. I think, well, Buffalo won one game, but then they lost again, right?
Yeah. They beat the Devils actually their last game.
Oh, that's right.
Last night, like 4-1, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, but still, it's like, yeah, the division the Rangers are in, it's a little bit, there's not as many abject, clear cut bottom teams, because even the Rangers are prone to go on little runs themselves. And, you know, you can argue between the Rangers and Buffalo, who just between not being able to get on the same page and just ever being plagued by injuries and inconsistency at the wrong time. And, you know, the Rangers' luck this year has been bad. It's been, you know, they've been behind the eight ball. It's been an uphill battle for them every step of the way. And, you know, sometimes you have to say, you know what, this season is clearly nothing's going our way, but maybe it's better if this happens. I've been telling myself, maybe it's better it's happening now when this team is clearly trying to rebuild itself and trying to get there, as opposed to when you're finally there and poised and you lose the season based on all the hijinks that the Rangers have been susceptible to. Although, and I say that knowing that same time there are teams like Boston that had so many injuries to start, but they're so good they didn't miss a beat. And then they get Pastrnak back, and, you know, right from the word go, he's been just as good, if not, you know, better than I remember. So, yeah, just that's the mark of a great team. And the Rangers are not a great team, obviously, because, you know, just I can't believe a year ago today, if I'm like, the Rangers are, you know, obviously missing Panarin always hurts, but, you know, missing Keandre Miller and Filip Hedl and Kako, you're just like, man, oh boy, like this is not good.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Like, I like Pinto, and I remember everyone, like, and this is the thing that I think Sens fans need to start realizing. We need to stop looking at the draft. We really need to stop looking at a player being like, he was drafted way too early. You know who you can make an argument who was drafted way too late? Mark Stone. Sixth round pick, and now he's making $9.5 million. Pageau, drafted, I think, in the fifth round and making $5 million. Hoffman.
Welcome to the Sens Hour podcast, your number one source for Sens content, part of the Hockey Podcast Network, hosted by Shane from Ottawa and
Derek from Muskoka, almost near Leaf Country out here. But I think Klevin was right up there because they traded up to get him with the Leafs. And again, they passed up some talented players for a guy like Klevin. But now Klevin's all of a sudden looking like a talented player himself. Like that goal that he scored in the third game in UND was outrageous. It was just not something you're expecting from the Twitter scouts, especially.
Sens Hour Podcast, your number one stop for all your Senators content. New episodes coming at you every Monday and Thursday, part of the Hockey Podcast Network. Have a good one. Stay safe.
Take care.
Yeah, tonight it is what it is. I feel like after the past, 48 hours that we both probably have had, that we're just kind of like, you know what? This Philly game is kind of just a drop in the bucket. And, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really mean much other than it's a game that we have to play. And, you know, if we could steal a point out of it, I'd certainly be thrilled with that. But, you know, I think right now, you and I, looking at the big picture, looking at the Mass Mutual East standings, you know, there's really not much. And I'll say this with a, you know, a little bit of, optimism, I should say. You know, we're not that far behind Washington or Pittsburgh or the Islanders or Philly, you know, and we're not that much better, I think, than Buffalo, New Jersey. If you really look at this, you know, division. You know, I think a lot of people might say, like, they don't score a ton. This division doesn't score a ton of goals. They kind of play tough, close hockey. And, you know, maybe that's because these teams are so familiar with each other. But, looking at this division, I really do think, like, obviously Boston is a clear-cut favorite to win the Stanley Cup. Like, to me, it's got to be like a top three team, right? Yeah. And then you look at the rest. You know, I think they're going to be battle-tested when it comes playoff time. Like, whoever comes out of the East is going to be so battle-tested, I think they could run through the other divisions. Because I'm honestly really not impressed. I mean, the Canadian division is kind of a joke. They literally don't play defense. It's almost like the NBA up there. And then you look at, you know, the Discover Central division, and you got Florida Panthers just ripping it up. You know, Tampa Bay is always going to be there. They're obviously dangerous. Carolina's another dangerous team. But I don't like the way that division's playing. I'm not impressed with that their brand of hockey. And you know, I don't buy it. You know, I'm not sold on it. And then obviously you go out west, and there's some dangerous teams out west. But again, another division where I'm not sold on the bottom five teams of that division. I don't know if playing those teams on a consistent basis all season long is going to gear you up, you know, for the playoffs. So whoever comes out of the west, you know, good luck if you're facing the Boston Bruins round, or, you know, in the semifinals, I should say, in the playoffs, because I don't know. I feel like Boston is getting battle tested with our division because of how tight it is and how close these games are, where the other divisions are so used to these blowouts. And, you know, I don't know. It's a different style of hockey, different brand, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's just, you know, they say styles make fights. And just like you said, watching, as fun as those high flying games in the North are, you just know that the second they run into a well-structured Tampa or Carolina or Bruins team, it might be lights out for them. You know, I obviously think there is some clear cut talent out there. I think the Avalanche are poised to hang with any of those teams, especially the way they're, you know, they're all guns firing on all cylinders right now. But even teams that are surprising, like the Blackhawks, you know, I've watched some of their games, and it's just, yeah, listen, you know, Patrick Kane has been brilliant this season for them, at least offensively. So they've gotten the saves they need. They've gotten good goaltending when they need it. And then just, you know, DeBrincat's kind of bounced back after, you know, maybe a down season last year. And, you know, he looks good, and everything Kane gets to him ends up in the back of the net, and vice versa. It's just, you know, Kane is he's just as good as he ever was. Exactly. You know, and this is all without Jonathan Toews, mind you, which is another discussion about where does that leave Toews, or at least the organization's viewing on, is he a necessary cog for them for right now, or should they move on from him, try to get some, you know, rebuild a little bit around Kane?
Is that COVID related? The Toews?
Yeah,
situation?
I think he. I don't think it was explicitly said, but the implication was that he was just not feeling 100% himself, and he needed to, like, yeah, get a handle on it. There might be some other underlying health issues there we don't know, but I think, you know, he just feels like it's affecting him. And listen, we know by now that COVID affects different, you know, everyone differently. Some people get it and they don't really have too many lingering effects. You look at Mika, he's clearly been a step up, but finally tonight he's actually looking like he's, you know, it took him how long to finally start, you know, looking accurate on net and like he's got some jump in his step. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and it's still been an up and down battle for him. So, that's what was being kind of alluded. I mean, it's just one of those things where, to your point, James, I just think this is the Mass Mutual East division is definitely the tightest. Yeah, there's not much separating those teams that will be fighting for the third and fourth slot. You know what I mean? I think they're all teams can get good goaltending on any night. Maybe the, you know, Buffalo is the only exception, but between, you know, the Islanders and the way they play defense and being coached by Barry Trotz and the way Varlamov's been, and listen, Blackwin's been good for the Devils when he's had to be, and Shesterkin's numbers are pretty, you know, even though tonight he's having a rougher night, although you look at who's in front of him, but he's, other than that, his numbers have been trending up solidly and he's just given them chances to win. And yeah, I think that's the one thing, this you have a division filled with probably the best on average goaltending in the league for any division. And, you know, also just you look at some of the, how disciplined some of the teams are, you know, I mean, outside of Buffalo for stretches and the fact that by design, Alain Vigneault's Flyers team has, you know, they're like bottom of the league in shots on net. And then they're also like top of the league in terms of like shot, you know, they allow a lot of shots, you know, on them. But at the same time, their PDO and their, you know, is really high and they're close to the league leaders and high danger scoring because that's how he likes to play. He likes to play that rope-a-dope counter attack style, and you can see it a lot, but at the same time, you get it allows you to like get some quality chances, you know? So, but yeah, I think for the most part, you look at all these teams and the Devils are better structured. The Rangers, at least defensively, are better structured, you know, at the sake of some offense. But yeah, it just, any team that thinks they're just going to, can, you know, outscore their problems is kind of in for a rude awakening when things tighten up. And listen, the Rangers were that a team like that last year, and they were awakened rudely when they got in the bubble and they played a team that actually had structure, and it labeled them, you know, inept. So.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, you know, given the way the playoffs are set up this year, the top four from each division will go on and play in a bubble situation and two rounds. And then the team representing each division will go into another bubble and represent their division in those semifinal and, you know, hopefully final, you know, whoever comes out of the East, obviously kind of pull for them a little bit. You know, the next thing I also wanted to discuss, Andy, is with Panarin's situation, right? Say he does not come back for 2 weeks, and it is what it is with 2 weeks. It's a shortened season, so those games mean a little bit more than if they were, if it was an 82 game schedule and he was out for 2 weeks. Where do you see the Rangers now being buyers or sellers at the deadline? You know, obviously we've mentioned players like Strom in the past. Obviously Tony DeAngelo is still up for grabs for teams that, you know, may want to see where they're at come the deadline. But, you know, do you see the Rangers as being another year of selling some of these contracts off, or do you see them kind of, you know, keeping their pieces in check and, you know, waiting for a few buyouts to come off the books next year?
Yeah, you know, and that's the big thing, is that are they waiting for all the decks cleared to do, you know, make most of their moves? You know, I think a lot of those contracts they gave out, you know, not knowing what, how it would play out with DeAngelo, but between Strom and Tony, and also the expansion draft, I think that is something that's also been on their horizons and weighing all that. And for some reason, I don't get the sense that it's possible a Strom could get moved, or there a team could reach out to the Rangers and just like, if Calgary continues to be inconsistent and it's just like, we want to change things up, whatever, either change the scenery for like a Monahan, or you know, just, you know, Sam Bennett still wants to leave or whatever, you know, then maybe something had happened and we could see a Strom go out, you know, the door, or maybe one of the Rangers prospects that hasn't made it up yet and with a draft pick. But for the most part, I do get this. The more time goes on, I kind of get the sense that this is, the Rangers are just standing pat. They're kind of letting their, you know, their players get another year older and waiting for guys to get healthy again. And, you know, Lafreniere is clearly still trying to figure it out. And, you know, Kako, as good as he's been, is just, you know, been struggling to at least put the puck in the net. So, yeah, I just think they, you know, I feel like we've been saying this for the past two seasons, but I do think that they're reticent. And especially though some of the contracts this team has given out recently haven't been so good, but I think Gorton is good one for at identifying players who need changes of scenery and flipping them. So yeah, I don't know. And again, I also don't know what type of, you know, I have no idea if Artemi Panarin, what type of pull he has with Jeff, or if he's something like Strom, is a guy who I can play with and I play my best with. Like, I don't, you know, I don't hope that that's not the case, but at the same time, that might be how he feels. But yeah, just for whatever reason, I think if the Rangers aren't, yeah, I think the Rangers are definitely strike me as more of a, because of where they're at in their development curve, more of a do their deals in the summer, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, around closer to the draft type team, just because it's like you said, they have all that money coming off the books. It'll make the landscape, it'll make the possibilities broaden their horizons a little bit of what they can do. You know, I have speculated recently, with everything they've been through, I think the one thing they wish they could do over is that they could have brought in a vet with like a capital V to be in that locker room to help them through stretches that they've gone through and all the ups and downs. Like, I do think they're kicking themselves for not like maybe making the best offer for a Joe Thornton, you know, especially what their center depth has been, you know, and how playing with, you know, he hasn't been a revelation, but playing with Marner and Matthews has helped give them a little bit extra lease on life, you know? So I do think that they may be part of them saying, we probably should have, you know, if we had a do-over, our bottom six wouldn't be devoid of like a veteran presence, even if it was a guy whose name carries a lot of water, but at the same time, he just wasn't what he once was, like a Brian Boyle type or whatever. But I do think if they could have done it over, they would do that, because I think they could have definitely used a voice like that in this locker room throughout some of the difficult stretches they've had, you know, both internally and on the ice, you know.
Yeah, and that's super important too, because you know, looking back at all the drama that has happened over this season, just the ups and downs and the roller coaster that we kind of knew it would be, you know, both of us knew that this is a team that was rebuilding. And when you're rebuilding and growing, there's growing pain. And certainly the Rangers are experiencing them. But, you know, they don't have that locker room presence of, you know, a Thornton, of a Pavelski, you know, even Ovechkin, Crosby. You know, there's not that guy to turn to. And, and you look at a guy like Henrik Lundqvist, and, you know, you realize what he did in goal was so special, but the way he was able to control that locker room, you know, under Lundqvist, you didn't really hear of many problems or issues happening with this club. And, you know, the year that he leaves, it just so happens that, you know, it's the housewives of New York City in the locker room. So, you know, it goes to show you, you know, you really can't put a price tag on having that veteran leadership, having a guy that walks in the locker room. And when he walks in and he's upset, everyone shuts up, everyone goes to their stall and, you know, goes about their business. You know, and no one's speaking out of turn, no one's pointing fingers, there's no blame being had. And you kind of need that voice, especially with a team that is going through one of the, you know, biggest change, I would say a two-year span change. Man, if you look at our roster 2 years ago and now, it's just like it's a bizarro world. You know, it's completely different, you know, with the draft picks that we were able to bring in and some of the new faces that we have acquired on free agency and, of course, you know, through trade. You know, we don't have that stable presence. And, you know, again, it can't be said enough that the Rangers certainly do miss it. I think you're spot on with that. Is it too late to bring one in though this season?
Yeah, I guess the problem is it becomes a matter of, because there was a bunch of those guys in the offseason, whether it was a, you know, like you said, a Wayne Simmons or a Joe Thornton, you know, both who go to Toronto, and Toronto, maybe they're would like to be a little bit tighter defensively, but at least, you know, offensively they've been the most dangerous team in that division. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I guess it becomes about who's available, you know, who might be looking for a change of scenery. You know, we've talked about Brian Boyle, but that is also an experiment that, even though his name does carry weight and he's been in the league for a while, but he's also kind of been out for the last little bit. And yeah, there might be a reason for that. So you worry and you don't know if it's like, can he still cut the mustard? 'Cause it's like, he's a guy who really needed power skating lessons to really help save his career, and it did help and extended it definitely, but at the same time, it's like, you know, Father Time is unbeaten. So is he fast enough to keep up with the National Hockey League now? I don't know, but yeah, I guess it comes as like, you know, are there packages out there that you could nab a
Eric
guy maybe
on?
Yeah, that's a thing. Is he still, he's finally come on a little bit in Ottawa, but you know that it's really hurting him. You know, it's just the timing was so bad with him having, you know, his wife having what, twins, right? So
yeah,
he's got a bunch of kids at home, and with Canada, it's just with quarantining and time is. So yeah, maybe he is a guy who is just looking to get back to the States anywhere. You know, he's probably not going, Arizona doesn't want him back, obviously. So, but yeah, who knows? Maybe that is, could be with, because he can still do a thing or two. And, you know, I just, again, it's just the contract is, you know, and what, who knows what, you know, it's weird. It's like, who is, you know, it's like, I think it's one of those things where, because Dorian's moving him, would have to move him, they'd have to kind of take a little bath on it. So it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I don't know what the package would entail or how much they could retain. But at the same time, it's because we know one of the main reasons they sought him out is because it was his most of that money was already paid out to him. And it was just the cap hit number. Right. So,
right.
But yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. But at the same time, you're right. That's a guy who, that's a team that's most likely going to be, you know, it's getting in the way of playing some of their younger guys, and they probably wish they could have done that over. So, yeah, maybe he is a guy they could go for. There's familiarity. His name carries weight. So yeah, again, I would definitely be for that. I think the Rangers clearly need some help up the middle. And if you can have a step on, you know, especially at a more attractive price, just have a guy that kind of floats around your middle six and provides a better, at least hopefully better defensive and, you know, smarter plays on the ice. And, you know, it's funny. I think a guy like, if you played him on the third line with like a guy like Lafreniere, I think those two could, you know, because they kind of, they play a similar thing where Stepan is, you know, slow as molasses, but he's just kind of always in the right spot. So I think him and Lafreniere can maybe they could get something going. I don't know, but.
I mean, Strome was able to do it with Panarin. You know, maybe it's we'll recapture that type of magic.
Yeah, exactly.
So I do, you know, want to close out a couple things as we wrap things up here. Okay, number one is going to be the New York Rangers play Boston twice in a row. I believe they play them on, is it Friday, Sunday?
Yes.
So God, Friday, Sunday. You're looking at a potential drop in three in a row if they end up losing this game that they are currently losing 4-2. It looked like that's probably going to be a loss. You're looking at a three in a row spiral, which obviously is never good. Are you as a fan, you know, obviously, you know, there's nothing you can really do if you're, you know, Gorton right now. But as a fan right now, or is it frustrating, or have you kind of accepted the fact that, you know, the Rangers are now in trouble?
Like I think I've accepted it. Listen, I'm happy with everything that's happened with the pandemic. Obviously I was all in and had high hopes for them early on, but I think I'm realizing it's just clearly with everything they've had to overcome so far and just kind of having hard realizations about maybe where they're at in their curve and just, you know, all the personnel clearly isn't there yet and they have a lot of spot fillers and their defense, you know, I clearly have promise in the wings and even, you know, Miller making the team out of camp was a great surprise. But the fact that if that didn't happen, where they would be, I think it's just kind of helped me reorient my expectations. So, you know what, listen, they're just a team that has some nice high end pieces, but between Mika having an off season and just all the litany of problems between, you know, unlucky with injuries and COVID and just losing key players at like the worst possible times for all litany of reasons. I think it's just, you know, I think I've accepted that. It's just going to be about hoping to see some development from this group, hoping Lafreniere can figure out the NHL game, hoping Kako can kind of take that step and show that what we're seeing can lead to on ice results. And, you know, it's that type of stuff. So it, a part of it hurts, but then there's a part of it that kind of feels a little bit freeing in the sense where it's just like, you know, it kind of helps me, you know. And listen, I don't want to say that I don't think this team can, if they get everyone gets healthy and gets back together and they can turn a corner together, that would be amazing. But I just, with the way the season is and the fact how far they are in their schedule already with not much time left, yeah, I'm a little less optimistic for that. But I don't know, it is what it is. I'm not expecting, if they get 2 out of possible 4 points, I'll be happy against the Bruins. But again, that's a team that's firing on all cylinders. They absolutely throttled the Flyers in the Outdoor Classic game, you know. So I think they look as confident as ever. And you remember, at least those games will be fun though, right? You remember how chippy it was between them in their last few meetings. So the Rangers just scored apparently.
All right,
3-4. So don't give me hope. Who was it? Was it Kreider? Did he get the hat trick? Let's see the game. Hat trick for Kreider. There you go.
Wow, look at this. It's unbelievable. You know, and you know, the Rangers, we can pencil them in for the fourth seed for the Mass Mutual playoffs. You know, this team's going to turn their season around starting tonight. Now, you know, I'm with you, Andy. At this point, you know, the most important thing is our young players, you know, get better every single game. And, you know, just Keandre's success so far this season has been such a pleasant surprise. Kako looking like an animal now this season, just so much more confidence. Lafreniere, obviously the numbers I don't think dictate his play and what he's been able to do so far this season, and just kind of learn how the NHL game is played. You know, I envision us right now, Andy, we're like a snake, right? The snake sheds, constantly shedding its layers, you know, and growing, and that's what kind of the Rangers need to do, you know. It first started with, you know, the sell-off, right? Admitting that, you know, right now the New York Rangers are a team that is, you know, selling and rebuilding. Okay, that was like phase one. Phase two is we, you know, gathered our picks, right? We won the lottery twice, right? Now we've gathered those assets. Now it's about time to experiment about, you know, we have our pieces. We got to let those pieces grow and then find, you know, the smaller, you know, role players that are going to, you know, essentially be there for the New York Rangers, you know, as they become a team that hopefully is dominant in the NHL. So, you know, again, it's just, it's a process and we can't say this enough. And looking at their schedule and looking at this division, this year is not going to be easy. And, you know, the tougher they play and the longer they kind of hang around, you got to applaud this team. And, you know, it's they stink right now. Let's face it. Like, without Panarin, without Mika firing all cylinders, you know, without, you know, consistent goaltending, we have Jack Johnson, Potato, we got Brodwinski or whatever his name is in the lineup taking, you know, penalties. You know, this team stinks right now, but they're hanging around. They find themselves hanging around with the second best team for point percentage wise in the Mass Mutual. So this is what we are. You know, we just got to kind of embrace the stink that we are right now and hopefully shed that layer of skin and rot and stink. And we blossom into, you know, a butterfly. I know I'm going different animals here, a snake into a butterfly, but, you know, that's what we are, Andy.
I don't know if I could set it any more beautifully myself. And you're right. That's kind of where they're at. It, like you said, it's, and we're finally starting to see them like push to close out gaps. And these are things that were foreign concepts to them earlier in the season. So, yeah, I mean, listen, you do maybe hope that once Kako is back and Hedl's back from injury and feeling good and Panarin is over his issues and they have everyone, if they say to themselves, we're still in this, we're all back together, the excuses are gone, we're stocked full of antibodies, let's do this, who knows, maybe they can. But right now it's obviously an uphill battle for them, but I do think it is making them stronger, you know, for the, in the long haul. You just, it's obviously, right, it's ultimately about making sure it doesn't seep, like the negativity doesn't, you know, become corrosive, right? But at the same time, I think as long as they, yeah, if their vets can keep doing what Kreider's trying to do tonight, you know, when he feels like it, I guess, you know, I think at least that shows the young guys, it doesn't matter what type of situation your team is in or where they're at or what their expectations for them are. You have to keep pushing and battling and getting better. And yeah, and I think if they can do that when everyone comes back and is healthy, and I think, yeah, I think they can finally realize they can actually do something, because listen, the potential is clearly there. So I'm now torn if I'm going to turn the call. I was going to call this When It Rains, It Pours, but I think I might now call it Snake into a Butterfly.
Well, I do want to make one more point, yeah, and yeah. I can close it out right here with
yeah,
this point.
Yeah, let's do it. Bring us home, baby.
Okay. February 26th, the Boston Bruins go to Madison Square Garden and face off against the New York Rangers. And for the first time in God knows how long, there will be fans in the seats at Madison Square Garden.
Thank you for listening to the Broadway Boys Podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Boys Pod, and please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, or thehockeypodcastnetwork.com.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter at HockeyPodNet. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.